Belmont Freeman is a architect in New York, but himself of Cuban descent originally, although not having grown up on the island, but he has been a frequent scholarly tourist and investigator in recent years, working frequently with Eduardo Luis Rodriguez, whose absence here today that we deeply regret, but working notably with Eduardo Luis Rodriguez on a seminal exhibition for North America at the Storefront for Art and Architecture, of which Belmont Freeman is a board member and a great sort of activist and supporter on Cuban modernism in the years immediately following the revolution. He's going to speak to us today on the end of the Quiet City, the Parques Mirara, oh no, that's sorry, the wrong one. These are very poorly laid out graphically. Housing the Revolution, Cuba, 1959 to 1969, on that first decade. So join me in welcoming Belmont Freeman.
Thank you, Barry, for that introduction. I wish to thank the organizers of this conference for the invitation to participate. As Barry mentioned, my good friend and colleague, the architect Eduardo Luis Rodriguez, originally intended to be here to represent Cuba, but he unfortunately was unable to travel from Havana at this time. I'm very honored that Eduardo Luis should suggest me as his substitute. Eduardo Luis and I have spent the last several years collaborating on the exhibition project entitled Architecture and Revolution in Cuba, 1959-1969, which focuses on the ambitious architecture of the first heroic phase of the Cuban Revolution, when the artistic and intellectual avant-garde of Cuba and the was in mutually supportive synchrony with the revolutionary government. The show opened at Storefront for Art and Architecture in New York in 2004 and is now poised for international travel and publication as a book that will come out in the summer of 2008. A mis colegas hispanos, discúlpeme, aunque estoy el representante de Cuba esta mañana, como el idioma oficial del simposio sea inglés, voy a dar mi conferencia en el lenguaje de mi padre y no el de mi madre. Cuban architecture in the 1960s is a large and fascinating topic, and the experimental efforts in the development of housing that the Cuban government sponsored in the first decade of the revolution forms one of the most interesting chapters of the story. The experience in the housing sector can also illustrate the trajectory of the architectural profession in Cuba during this period. This paper, which will examine different strategies for the design and production of housing in the early years of the Cuban Revolution, is based on the research by Eduardo Luis Rodriguez, as well as my own investigations and travels. With the few exceptions that will be noted, the black and white archival photos that you will see on the screen are from the collection of Eduardo Luis Rodriguez, while the color slides are mine, as are the interpretations, opinions, and errors. Cuba in the 1950s was a modernist paradise, at least for those privileged to benefit from the burgeoning post-World War II economy. Buoyed by high prices for cane sugar since the war eradicated the European beet sugar industry, and augmented by tourism and gambling revenues, Havana, which is where the wealth of the country was overwhelmingly concentrated, underwent a huge building boom, unprecedented since the first years of the Republic. And it was a thoroughly modern building boom. The architectural community in Havana in the 1950s was cosmopolitan and fully up to date on international trends. The extraordinary work done in Cuba in the 1950s is well documented by Eduardo Luis in his Havana Guide, Modern Architecture and La Havana Arquitectura del Siglo XX. A glance at the pages of Cuban architectural journals at the time reveals that the major preoccupation of Havana architects in the 1950s was luxury housing for an affluent bourgeois clientele. Certainly, it was the arena in which the greatest formal experimentation was taking place. A sampler of the best work of the period would include swank apartment towers like these on the Malecón in El Vidalo. or the Almar Apartments by Antonio Boada, the Partagas building by Max Borges Jr., and the highly innovative mixed-use project, the Seguros Médicos buildings by Quintana Rubio and Perez Beato. More significantly, it was the single family house that afforded the most fertile design opportunities to progressive practitioners like Frank Martinez, Manuel Gutierrez, and the great Mario Romagnas, who incidentally was a professor of mine at the University of Pennsylvania, here represented by the Ana Carolina Fon residence of 1956, and the magnificent Nueva Puerto residence in the Country Club district of La Habana, 1950. Certainly probably the most important modernist house in Havana. Suburbs to the west of the old city flowered as Elysian modernist landscapes, which today lead one to the impression that life in Havana in the 1950s was one of beauty, luxury, and total modernity. All of this changed abruptly on New Year's Day, 1959, with the triumph of the armed revolution. 2 years of guerrilla warfare achieved military victory, while concurrently the rebel forces' public relations efforts secured popular political victory. By the time that Fidel Castro entered Havana in mid-January, he enjoyed huge popular support based upon promises of reform and social justice. The young revolutionary government was quick to set up a new order. The building trades were among the first to be nationalized as the government took control of the means and materials for construction and enlisted the labor force for its own projects. Vacant land was nationalized, stanching speculative development, and landlords were relieved of income-producing property. Private investment evaporated, and overnight the government became the only client for architecture. But it was a hyperactive client with extremely ambitious plans. In the very first weeks of the revolution, the government announced vast building programs to advance its social goals in the areas of housing, education, healthcare, recreation, and human services. Architecture, from the beginning, was meaningfully engaged in the revolutionary effort, both programmatically and iconographically. This was a modern revolution, to be represented by the most modern architecture. Architects in the building trades were seen as valued exponents of the revolution. It was a moment of tremendous optimism when utopia seemed readily achievable. The work of building the new Cuba was entrusted to a group of very young architects. The old guard of the profession had, in near entirety, departed the country along with their affluent clients, leaving young, politically committed practitioners and recent graduates in control of the profession. This was a well-trained group steeped in modernism, the architecture school of the University of Havana having been one of the most progressive in Latin America. These young architects' school projects, early office training, and pre-revolutionary commissions, however, had focused on building programs for the elite, and in particular, on the single-family house, a building type suddenly extinct. And now they were being asked to grapple with the challenge of designing for social programs for which scant architectural tradition existed in Cuba. In 1958, 85% of Cubans lived in dwellings that lacked water, electricity, or both. This page from a 1963 publication contrasts a bourgeois pre-revolutionary house, in this case the 1957 Ennis residence by Ricardo Porro, to a rural shanty town. I must say that the selection of Porro's project to illustrate here is somewhat of a curious choice, because by 1960, Porro, one of the great Cuban architects of the 20th century, had returned to Cuba to participate in the revolutionary effort, and in 1963 was busy at work on the National Art Schools in Havana. To address the situation of substandard housing and to start to deliver on political promises the government established in February 1959 the Instituto Nacional de Ahorros y Viviendas, or the National Institute of Savings and Housing. The dwellings built by INAV would be given to the low-income families determined by the Department of Social Services to be the most in need. The homes would become the family's property after construction costs were amortized by low monthly payments. INAV projects employed local contractors and used traditional construction methods and materials in continuation of pre-1959 industry standards. INAV started big by taking up an urban expansion scheme conceived in the mid-50s by the Batista government. The completion in 1957 of a tunnel under Havana Harbor made accessible vast tracts of land on the east side of the bay. A new city plan by José Luis Sert called for, in addition to a bizarre artificial island for casinos and hotels, a new civic center on the east side of the harbor, accompanied by a complex of luxury apartment towers. In 1959, the revolutionary government recast the scheme as an enormous public housing project. Havana del Este, in its first phase, included 1,300 apartments in 58 buildings, ranging from four-story walk-ups to 11-story slabs. The master plan by Hugo da Costa is clearly informed by contemporary Northern European planning concepts. The site is belted by a ring road, and housing is organized on cul-de-sacs in seven sectors, each with a variety of service facilities and landscaped outdoor spaces. At the middle of the complex is a town square with commercial and administrative center, a clinic, schools, and large sports facility. The vision was one of well-designed, hygienic housing, totally middle class in appearance, integrated into a new social and natural landscape, and quite unimaginably made available to the poorest Cuban citizens. The built reality, which was designed and executed in an astonishingly short period from 1959 to 1961, did not disappoint. By employing more than 10 designers, the huge complex avoids monotony. The high-rise apartment slabs by Mario Gonzalez and Julio Baladron are skillful but conventional examples of a building type well exercised in the 1950s. Much more inventive are the low-rise blocks, especially those by Hugo da Costa and Mercedes Alvarez, which are composed as cubes set on the diagonal and strung together in meandering rows, enclosing intimate landscaped spaces. Some of the special purpose buildings stand out, including the wonderful little kindergartens by Alvarez and Balatron. Havana del Este immediately became the showcase exemplar of Cuban housing and planning concepts, integrating as it does the provision of housing with the delivery of healthcare, education, and other social services. A poster from these years declares that in Cuba, housing is also a daycare center, a theater, a clinic, etc. Fidel Castro, addressing the 1964 Congress of Architecture Students and Professors, said, "If you wish to witness our dreams in the field of urban development, you must visit Havana del Este." The Castro government in the 1960s conceived many grandiose plans for satellite housing developments around the major cities and in the province's entire new towns. Construction was begun on many, though few were built to their full intended extent. An important attempt by the new government to improve housing conditions in the center city took form at the Talla Piedras housing complex by Fernando Salinas, built on the edge of Old Havana in 1960. The initial concept called for the clearance of 11 blocks of a deteriorated neighborhood and the construction in phases of 25 apartment buildings with social and commercial services on the ground floor. Only the first phase of six buildings was completed. Limited to four stories in height, The buildings respect the traditional urban scale, but their convex facades break the street wall. Major attention was given to the interior courtyard spaces created between the spiral buildings, paired like sets of apostrophes, enlaced together by pedestrian walkways. Open-air lobbies and sculptural stairwells are rich in form and contribute to a pleasant, humanely scaled environment in the densest part of the city. A totally different approach to urban housing was taken by Antonio Quintana and Alberto Rodriguez with their radical apartment tower on the ocean in the elite Havana neighborhood of El Vedado. Nobody at the time would have missed the political significance of erecting a low-income housing project on the Gold Coast of the Malecón. The tower employed a novel structural system of load-bearing concrete stair and elevator shafts of slip-formed construction, a process by which concrete is poured into sliding metal forms that rise with the tower. The highly articulated massing clearly separates vertical and horizontal circulation from the stacks of apartments, while the individual dwelling units are creative in layout and enjoy great cross-ventilation and privacy. The rigidly symmetrical disposition of the two apartment blocks, their closed facades, and the lack of balconies perversely squander the advantages of the splendid oceanfront site. Perhaps the enjoyment of a sea view was considered a bourgeois conceit not to be valued. This tower was erected in 1967 and was one of the last high-rise apartments to be built in Cuba. 5 years after the United States had imposed its punitive trade embargo, elevators had become prohibitively expensive to procure and maintain. After this, the policy of building no higher than 4 stories prevailed. The custom-designed one-off single-family residence had become an extinct building type by 1960. But INAV and other government agencies built thousands of modest detached dwellings conceived as units in mass housing developments in suburban and rural areas. None is quite as distinctive as the Reparto Abel Santa Maria complex by Nicolas de la Cova, built in 1963 on the outskirts of Havana, near the airport. The houses, about 3 meters in diameter, are all identical. They're sized to house for a family of 6 with bedrooms and living spaces arranged around a central bathroom. The complex remains an attractive and tidy neighborhood today. At its heart lies, appropriately enough, a circular market building, which contains space for multiple vendors, social service offices, and in the whole of the donut, a daycare center where mothers can drop off their children while they shop. This market building was a prototype designed by Frank Martinez in 1961 and built in several locations across the island. Martinez, you may remember, was the architect of the soaring Perez Farfante house that I showed in the opening of this talk, the houses of the 1950s. Martinez was one of the few established architects from the 50s who remained in Cuba to participate in the socialist experiment. His architectural style, however, underwent a radical transformation from a strong horizontal rectilinear linearity that you saw before to a preoccupation with curved forms. Eduardo Luis and I have speculated on the obsession in Cuba during these years with circular buildings, such as this primary school in Havana by Rafael Mirabal. We sense a rejection of the North American and European international style modernism that characterized pre-revolutionary design, as well as perhaps an attraction to the cosmic imagery of space travel, the race for which, with the launching of the Russian Sputnik, was at that moment led by the communist bloc. By the middle of the 1960s, the focus of Cuban housing policy had shifted decidedly towards industrialized production. In the second quarter 1965 issue of Arquitectura Cuba, Hugo da Costa, who was now the director of technical research for the Ministry of Construction, reviewed the state of the construction industry in Cuba, which was focused clearly almost entirely upon the industrial prefabrication of building components. In a 1966 issue, Fernando Salinas made an impassioned case for industrialized housing as the only appropriate means to achieve the goals of the revolution. The quest was for an efficient and an inexpensive system of prefabricated building components that could be shipped to the provinces or even overseas. During these years, Cuba was already exporting medical equipment, pharmaceuticals, doctors, and engineers to Vietnam, Angola, and other emergent socialist countries. Cuban modern architecture had become one more of the revolutionary government's coins of ideological exchange. In the process, the meaning of modernism in Cuba was completely inverted from the decade prior. While in the 1950s, modern architecture, as throughout Latin America, was a part of a strategy to secure Cuba's place among culturally advanced first world nations, while in the 1960s, Cuba's more technological modernism was deployed to advance Cuba as the avatar of third world revolution. One of the more promising experiments in prefabrication was the Sistema Multiflex, developed between 1965 and 1970 by Fernando Salinas and illustrated in his article in Arquitectura Cuba. The concept was to provide a kit of parts, including wall panels, doors, windows, closets, and kitchen and bath modules from which residents could select to individualize their homes. Modular waffle slabs supported on columns made the roof. A prototype complex was erected in 1970 in Huajai, outside of Havana. While it was much admired at the time, the Sistema Multiflex never went into large-scale production. Far more radical in concept and design were the Módulos de Cimientos Bestos by Hugo Acosta and Mercedes Alvarez, they of the Havana del Este design team. The project grew out of a design competition for affordable housing in 1964 and was developed by the architect's own efforts through 1968. The proposal called for the mass production of a basic building panel formed from a sheet 6 millimeters thick of asbestos-reinforced cement. The lightweight modular panels, roughly 1 by 3 meters in size, were double-curved for strength like auto body side panels, and incorporated doors and windows. They could be bolted together to form a rigid framework and enclosures of infinite variety. The architects even envisioned stacking the modules up to 4 high to create multiple dwelling units. Bathroom and kitchen components were integrated into the modular system, and the interiors were fitted with ingeniously designed Murphy beds, tables, chairs, and storage pieces. 8 prototypes of the Módulos de Cimientos Asbestos were assembled, but like Salinas's Multiflex, it never went into full-scale production. One gets the idea that even the new revolutionary Cuban was not quite ready to move into such radically reimagined housing. While the avant-garde investigations into the genre may have stalled, more prosaic systems of prefabricated building proved to be an effective strategy for producing housing, especially in rural Cuba. The community of Las Terrazas in the Sierra del Rosario in the western province of Pinar del Rio is a particularly fine example. Built between 1968 and 1975 to house people employed in forest industries, timber, coffee, and ecotourism, Las Terrazas is the work of Mario Hirano, Osmani Cienfuegos, and a brigade of architecture students. The complex is laid out on roads that follow the contours of the hills and surround a man-made lake. Houses are perched on pilings to minimize excavation and leveling of the site. The buildings were all constructed using the uncomplicated Novoa system of prefabricated housing components consisting of concrete, tilt-up wall panels, posts and lintels, floor planks, and roof panels. The simple house plans and double-pitched roofs covered in red tiles respect local building traditions. The long serpentine apartment block that spans the valley represents more of a break from the vernacular, as does the cultural and commercial center at the top of the hill. This is a recent photograph from Las Terrazas. It's really extremely beautiful sight. In 1964, the Soviet Union donated to the Cuban people a factory for the mass production of precast concrete building components erected in Oriente province near Santiago de Cuba. Replicating the building systems dominant in the Soviet Union and East Germany, what was known in Cuba as the Gran Panel system made possible the fast and inexpensive construction of large housing complexes. The first projects that emanated from the factory retained some architectural integrity, such as the 1964-67 Viviendas José Martí in Santiago, where the precast modules are sculpted as modern interpretations of traditional persianas, and the play of light and shadow provides some relief. After this project, however, for reasons ideological as much as economic, creativity and individuality were suppressed in favor of mass production, and Cuban cities were blighted with the Soviet-style housing complexes, such as Alamar, east of Havana, in which so many unfortunate Cubans live today. The decline in the quality of housing production at the end of the 1960s was paralleled by the degradation of the architectural profession in Cuba. The College of Architects was dissolved in 1967, and independent architectural practice ceased. Architects, those who stayed in Cuba and stayed in the profession, were absorbed into government ministries. The respected professionals who in the 1960s were lauded as heroic agents of the revolution ended the decade as anonymous government bureaucrats. ENAV, with its enlightened social goals and high aesthetic standards, was disbanded in 1962, and responsibility for production of housing was shifted to the Housing Department of the Ministry of Public Works. As the effects of the US embargo took their toll and the planned economy faltered, scarce resources were diverted to other sectors and new housing production plummeted. But in reviewing the housing strategies of the Cuban Revolution, one must observe another phenomenon that transpired over the course of the 60s. By the middle of the decade, the exodus of the wealthy and upper middle classes was substantially complete. The affluent immigrants left behind an enormous inventory of high quality housing, which, pursuing a perfectly rational and cost-effective policy, the Cuban government proceeded to subdivide into housing for the poor. The former homes of the wealthy, as in El Vedado and in Miramar, became state-owned multiple dwellings, and the house on the right is the Font residence by Mario Romagnas, which you saw earlier. When I was there 3 years ago, it was occupied by 5 families. In rapid order, formerly elite districts became dense popular neighborhoods, thereby improving housing conditions for more Cubans and imposing a more profound impact on the demography of Cuba than all demographic geography of Cuba than all of the new housing projects in the revolution. The slogan "Revolution is construction" has survived in Cuba from 1959 to the present day, though as we have seen, the role of architects in the construction of the revolution has evolved several times over. Events in the current news suggest that Cuba is on the eve of yet more significant change, and it will be interesting to see what the effect of political and social evolution in Cuba will have on its architecture. Thank you.